Welcome to the Bangers List podcast, the second season, back with Big Nuts, our resident guitarist, and Jules, the ex-band drummer. It's a podcast about metal music and, like, you know, any good love. We're going to ease it back in today with a more of an entry-level band. We're going to be talking about band Ghost and their entry-level banger.
Watcher in the Sky.
Yes. Welcome, guys. How are we?
Oh, first of all, I love how Ghost is an entry-level band. And I mean, like, they're like just chart-topping worldwide at the moment.
You didn't script that at all, but it's so fucking scripted. Yes, look, obviously I've said entry-level band because people smarter than me have said that, and I'm not a power bottom, so I'm not going to push back. But when it comes to entry-level bands, what does that mean? How do you guys feel about that?
I think by entry-level band, what he meant was like approachable by everybody. Like
that makes sense.
Yeah, you could listen to this even if you didn't like metal.
Yeah, and usually we try to focus on like smaller heavy metal bands. This is almost like a rock band.
Yeah, I agree. I think they diverge a little bit. I think, you know, you listen to some of their stuff, you're like, that's more on the heavier side. But then, fuck, they've got like rock ballads, stadium anthem rock, fucking, you know,
they're synth pirate style rock.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's jump into a sample and get some context. Looking for the watcher in the sky. Searchlight. Looking for the watcher in the sky. All right, so there's a sample, and as you can see, what this song lacks in breakdowns and screams really makes up for in rock and Satanism. Tell us about the history of the band, guys.
All right, well, I think they got kicked off in about 2005. Tobias Forge, lead singer, who has reincarnated himself on four or five different occasions. We'll get into that shortly. But my understanding is they formed about 2005. First album,
2006.
I think it was about 2010. I could be wrong.
Infinitesimal.
Yeah,
they had like an EP or something as well.
Yeah, they did. But now, about five albums later, they're topping charts worldwide. Like we touched on earlier, I think it's because they're very, very approachable. Even for your average fan, it's very easy to listen to. Even if it is on the darker, heavier side of things at times, but they've got really catchy hooks. Really melodic lines that anyone can kind of gravitate towards, right? But how do you guys feel about that?
In the limited experience I've had with them, yes, that's very much so. Like, you look at this song and there's double bass in it, but everything production-wise is very much rounded towards that friendly rock sound. Mm. Almost, I heard the song and then I thought to myself, oh, I'll go and do a bit of reading about it, right? And he's very much a multi-instrumentalist and he does most of it himself. And as we'll sort of unpack a bit, it's sort of his band and he just gets touring musicians with him sort of thing.
Correct, yeah.
And that's how it was from the start, but like there was a bit of controversy. So what happened, I think, was like he started it and he was the main figure and then all the musicians were anonymous and they went under the title Nameless Ghouls.
Correct,
yeah. Nameless Ghouls, yeah. And then that went on for ages and there was obviously a lot of like media attention as they grew in popularity. And I think in about 2017, couple of the ex-musicians sued him and that was actually the first time that his identity and former band members' identities had been released.
Spot on.
As part of the lawsuit. So Charles just beaming at me with pride. He's like, he actually researched the band, you don't listen to
them. He hates them and yet he knows all about them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, knowledge is power, right? So then they went on to, obviously his identity was revealed and stuff like that. So, but he's continued on with the reincarnation of the character Papa Emeritus or Emeritus. We're probably going to pronounce him that wrong no matter what we do. So, and he's done that over and over. But then he's added more and more auxiliary musicians as well. I think now he has a couple of female vocalists. There's a couple of keyboardists. Yep. They might be the same people. I don't know. Wikipedia is really weird for that. Like you can't believe – since I started seeing that guy do the Wikipedia fact of fiction, I now automatically don't believe anything I read on Wikipedia. It's like a 2.5 star at best.
Yeah.
His touring ensemble now probably has over 40 people for his latest kind of tour and album.
That was pretty epic. Hey, yeah.
40 people. What, like on stage or?
As part of the whole kind of show, I believe.
Okay. Like
whether or not they're all instrumentalists, musicians, unsure, but yeah.
Yeah, there was even one point when they actually killed off one of his characters on stage.
I think they've done it a few times.
They've done that a few times. Kidnapped. And they get people coming in. At one stage, they had these.
I read that.
Nuns. People dressed in nuns came in and I think they just pretended to murder him and
it was like the second
stripped him off, and then all of a sudden he's reborn, right?
So, yeah, well, I read that at the end of like the final show of a tour, they had people basically like not kidnap him, but he got dragged off stage by other ghouls or like people dressed as the ghouls and stuff. So, and he's done. There was three Papa Emeritus's.
Well, they're up to the fourth now.
And then he did Cardinal Copia. Then he's back to Papa Emeritus
Papa 4. So Papa 1, 2, and 3, Cardinal Copia, and then Papa 4.
It's sort of like Slipknot with their masks. It coincides with every record release.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. And they're really, I guess, thematic with the way they write and portray things. And and they like to represent that with their performance on stage as well. They like to mix things up. If you think of, back to Papa the First, if you look at footage of him playing and Joel Eve, I think you even saw him saw Ghost in their somewhat early days, right? Would have been Papa 1 or 2. And could you describe how, what his presence was like or what their presence was like on stage and how that felt?
Yeah, it was.
We've both seen him.
You saw him too?
Yes, yeah. And we weren't into them at the time, and it was a very kind of eerie feeling. It was an older album.
Yeah.
It wasn't, I don't know if they were as popular as they are now.
That was Soundwave 2014. That was when they had Bring Me and then Amity straight up.
A long time ago.
But Ghost was in between, I think.
Yeah, and
you would have been like, what the fuck's going on
here? Yeah, I was.
It was a very weird feeling because like they're very Bring Me played at dusk and then like as like night was falling, Ghost came on. So a lot of their like stage theatrics and lights and sort of that whole thing was very like that was well received because it was a lot more visible because they had the cover of Night, I suppose. But I mean, if they were playing during the day, I don't know that it would wash as well. So,
yeah, of course, because you take away from the whole show itself. But their, like I said, their music at that time, I remember it didn't feel as mainstream as it does now. It wasn't necessarily as pleasant to listen to with all the repeated catchy choruses over and over. It was a different kind of sound. But a good different presence, different to like all the other metal bands that were at that kind of festival.
I don't remember them at all. Like I remember watching them and going, oh, this is pretty like interesting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because obviously like at that point in time and as much now, all of us were not, against the idea of bands using like stage makeup and costumes and sort of like a presence and like a theme sort of thing or like a stage show. Yeah. None of us really saw that as problematic or as, something we didn't like. But I for the last, I guess, when was that? 2013. So for the last nearly 15 years, 2013 is 2010. No, I can't even do math. It's like 9 years. Fucking hell. for the last nine, Jesus Christ. For the last 9 years, I've never listened to another song of theirs and I've just always thought they were a lot heavier. My brain just went, no, they were really heavy. And then that was it. And then it turns out, nope, not even close.
Not heavy at all.
Yeah, it might be tainted by the fact that you saw them on stage dressed in these robes, these, anti-Catholic kind of.
Whole thing, yeah.
Very appealing.
And then you probably, just by default associated them with heavy metal.
I was thinking about it yesterday, and I think what actually caused it as well was in 2015, I want to say, there was the Big Ass Tour. That was Amity, A Day to Remember, Motionless in White, and another band that I can't remember. And I'd never heard Motionless in White. And I think they kind of have not as hectic, but they still kind of have like a stage get up. I think some of them have makeup or something
face paint. From what I've seen, they do.
And I remember thinking they was like brutally heavy. And because they played this one song that I vaguely remember that had just had a monster fucking breakdown in it. I was like, oh, this is sick. So I went home and I listened to some of the stuff and I was like, oh, they're a bit more tame than I thought. Mm. That was one of their more like heavier songs. So I think that I conflated the two. Yeah. And I just went, oh, they were heavier than I remember.
That can happen. That can happen. And I think, to be fair though, since you saw them then, I think they've come a long way musically. They're not in terms of songwriting, right? And we listen to Watcher in the Sky as an example, and we'll get into that song. We'll break it down a little bit soon. But from what I've heard of the earlier records, it was definitely more of a focus on kind of Hail Satan kind of.
Yeah, it was very dark.
It was very dark, and it was and I think as they've progressed, kind of Tobias as a songwriter has obviously gotten a lot better, and I think he now focuses more on hooks, more on making songs catchy, making songs approachable. Yeah. He's found a formula where he knows that people will listen to it, and couple that with the whole theme they've got going on, right? The stage presence.
It's very eye catching.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they're not just a band, like
it's an experience.
I think Tobias described the band as a project, because you're saying earlier that band members have all left from the early days,
sort of cycled through.
And they accused when they sued Tobias, I think it was for a royalty dispute or something, but
something like that. Yeah.
Something like that, and that's when his identity was consequently revealed.
I think with things, sorry to cut you off. I think with like lawsuits and shit like that, we only ever get 10% of what it was actually about.
Yeah,
because
100%.
I mean, like both sides are gonna go, oh, this and this and this, and like only one of them is essentially telling the truth. But I think sometimes neither of them are.
Yeah,
but you don't hear the truth from either of them.
That's right. I think you just gotta take everything with a grain of salt what you hear online, and yeah, I just try to not let those things, unless it's really fucked up, I try not to let those sorts of things interfere with my or skew my opinion of the band to remain objective to the music itself.
Those events aren't going to change anything in your life, and they're not going to change what music has been written and what will be written.
Yeah.
So ultimately, there's no reason for you to let those more tame things bother you. Do you know what I mean? Like it's not going to change the course of humanity or the course of the band. Like So I think people tend to get really invested in small things like that. Like the whole, I guess a bad but good example is like the whole Dave Mustaine, Kirk Hammett thing. Like no one cares. And I don't think it's that much of an issue anymore, but some people still love to bang on, oh, Kirk Hammett didn't write any fucking thing. So what? They still released Ride the Lightning and it was still sick.
Yeah.
Like, and that's it. Get over it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And then they went on to have a slow descent of talent in their career.
And with the Ghosts, I think like you're kind of getting to the point that they are like a don't judge a band by its cover. Like they're, the themes on their album covers probably scare people away, but then you turn it on and they're like, we've seen they sound like ABBA, basically. And with the themes they talk about, you said there was Satanism for a period of time. I'm quite sure their second album might have even been banned in the US. And that's a large market. And obviously they didn't.
It had nudity on the cover.
Oh, is that why?
I don't know if it was the second one, but one at Meliora.
Meliora.
Because I know that Melior is Latin for strong.
It's probably that then. You're probably right.
Yeah. It's an I Killed the Prom Queen song. So I think it's, I don't know, I'll look it up. But anyway, yeah, they had, depicted nudity on the cover. And American labels were like, nope.
Yeah.
Not going to do that at all.
Which is only like 2005-ish to 2010 at the latest.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, obviously the world is massive. And not just the US, that's a large market, but obviously that was so popular and their stuff was so good that the rest of the world kind of carried them, to their mainstream where they are now. And they're huge in the US now, so it's
an
interesting kind
massive,
of
absolutely thing. Massive.
So just so I got it right, their debut album was Opus Eponymous.
That's the one.
And I'm going to have a crack at pronouncing the name of their second major label record. Well, this is apparently their major label debut, Infestasumum. I don't know how the fuck you pronounce that. Normally that's very my wheelhouse, but yeah, that's probably something.
I love it though. I love how out there it is.
Maybe they saw that and said, we can't read that, therefore we can't have it on shelves. Get rid of it.
No, I think there was, so you're right, there were several issues with the with getting the artwork sorted that subsequently delayed the release of the album because there was a bit of pushback in that regard. But there was also I think what you might be thinking of, Joel, was I recall reading that there was an issue with getting
there was no choir.
There was no choir because they wouldn't do
it. They wouldn't sing the lyrics.
They were too religious and they didn't want anything to do with it.
I don't think they were in Pittsburgh. They were somewhere in America and they had to go to Hollywood or they had to go to California because where they were, they couldn't find a choir that would sing the lyrics because they were like, that's too evil for us. It is. One thing I was going to mention as well, I think it's interesting. I have this sort of back and forth dialogue in my head. When you see an artist refusing to relent on their art, so like let's say, for instance, the nudity on the artwork, and you think, man, you're in a fucking position that like people would kill to be in. like, you know, why would you not compromise? But at the same time, you also respect an artist's integrity and say you shouldn't have to write or create art to suit somebody else's feelings. So, like, it's just this weird dichotomy. And I think artwork is very much different to music. So, like, cover art, okay, you look at Slayer, right? Like, I think it was World Painted Blood. They had to redo that. They've had problems with their artwork for years. But every time people kick up a sting about it, they're like, all right, fuck, we'll just make it something different. And then it can be the first, like, the original artwork can be like a special release or something. So I feel like they kind of, in a way, went, okay, we don't like the system, but we're sort of going to work with it a little bit. So I don't know. Maybe I wonder if it was something like that, or he just wouldn't back down on it, or it was really brutal. I don't know. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, look, I mean, there's a lot to think about when it comes to that sort of thing, right? Like, and in all honesty, like, I got into Ghost maybe like 2 months ago, a month or two ago, but I've really fucking got into them, and I'm learning a lot more about the band. Like, the more I read about, the more I listen to them. Like, a lot of shit's gone down. Like, a lot of shit's gone down, and
that's the life of a muser.
Yeah,
I guess.
Well, yeah, it's not just, you're not just dealing with, you know, writing, touring, promoting, whatever. Like, there's a lot of controversy that's associated with it.
Especially with this kind of outfit, and they've been around for a while now. So you'd sort of appreciate from the musician's perspective that it just becomes a fucking drag after a while. You're like, this is what we're doing. We're not hurting anybody. Like, what's the issue
here? Yeah.
We've got a fan base. They're not out, you know, necessarily causing problems. I can't say that for sure. But, like, what's the, like, why do people care? You know what I mean? Like, why is this a problem?
Yeah. Does it actually affect you? Like, you got to sit back and ask
yourself.
And
that's the question too. Yeah. If it doesn't affect you, do you have a right to complain about it? So.
Let's not go down that rabbit hole. Now, I think the real problem is picking the song we decided to talk about and why, because it was very difficult. We got a lot of songs.
You were there. Very diverse.
Catchy. So why did you pick this one to talk about, and what, a new person hasn't heard this band before, why is it good for them to get into?
So the reason I picked this, and firstly, I wanted to pick something that was new. Like, they've got some really, really cool shit from, you know, especially their last album, Prequel, I think it's called. Fucking fantastic album. But I wanted to promote Impera because it's relevant right now. It's out there. It's on the charts right now. I think debuted at number one in Sweden. No, Swedish band, makes sense, but still fucking number one. Number two in the US, number three here in Australia.
See, that was wild. Like I didn't know anything about them.
They're fucking already killing it, man.
Dude, they're
fucking
massive.
Killing it. And now they're like at the point where they're co-headlining festivals and shit. And like, I'm not going to be surprised if in 5-10 years from now, like, we're going to be talking about Ghost stadium tours and all that. Like, I think they're
not quite there yet, but they're like on that trajectory.
Yeah, like, they're on the level of like A7X or Slipknot at the moment. Like, I'd say they're maybe a bit behind them. They've got a bit of work to do there,
like,
but like,
Slipknot's a bit, pretty big set of
and their fans are just nuts. Like, their fans
they've got a very, very like fervent fan base.
Yeah,
like, very solid.
Yeah, and they're loyal, and I think they're just gonna, they're gonna ride it out with them till the end. So,
but it's not like they've got a very small but loyal fan base. They've got a fan base. They've got that core, like every band does. But there's the peripheral fans are growing with every record that comes in.
Even
me, to an extent. Like, I enjoy their music now.
Yeah,
to a few of their albums, like, this is good stuff.
Oh fuck!
And like, as I was saying,
catchy shit in there.
Yeah, especially with this song as well. Like, the chorus is very catchy. But what he does, which is very clever, is at the end of the song, you know, they would have been like, what do you want to do for the outro, Tobias? He's like, just play the chorus fucking 50 times and slowly fade out.
I noticed that, yeah.
And that's, that's the formula. And it works. And you get there in your song, you'll be in your head, you'll be walking around during the day with those fucking catchy tunes in your head. It's clever.
I know, I did notice that. But Spotify has recently introduced lyrics, like, on mobile and on the app. So you can, like, swipe up. In the
Actually, I saw that.
And then you can click it and it expands it to the whole screen. And I was like, I thought to myself, before we came into this as a band that I didn't know, I'm actually going to try and make note of the lyrics rather than just being like, oh, yeah, it's not bad. Sick. You know what I mean?
Personal growth.
Yeah, exactly right. And then talk about some other shit. No, and I just, the last outro is, it takes up the entire page of my phone of just searchlights looking for the watcher in the sky, repeated over and over and over and over.
It's like, sorry, 15, what was it again?
Yeah, exactly right. So I think what Jell is saying is very accurate. Like, he's got that kind of voice and that timber and sound that's just gets stuck in your head. But it doesn't annoy you as such. It's not like when you get like a pop song stuck in your head and it gives you the shits.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, so that's very effective. I'm assuming the rest of the album has that kind of thing too.
It's got a
a lead single sort of one?
This is I actually know if they've released this as a single, but it's one of the most one of the fan favorites, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
They've had a few. I think they came out with Hunter's Moon before they released the album. That's a banger too. I was almost gonna pop that one on the list, but I went with Watcher in the Sky, and I'll get into why in a sec. But they've got some, you know, some rock ballads on there. They've got some like almost Nightwish-esque kind of European metal in there, and just straight up rock songs, right? And they've got a single out at the moment, Call Me Little Sunshine. It's, I think, it's number one on rock radio in the US right now as we speak. So
that's fucking big.
Yeah.
Especially for non-American artists.
And yeah. I'd like, it's a cool kind of song. I think it's definitely different.
It's quite basic. It's catchy, but it's very basic.
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't, if you say basic, it doesn't mean it's well done. Mm-hmm. It just means you've put it together in a basic, simple way. Haven't tried to, overcomplicate
You haven't tried to reinvent the wheel.
Yes. Yeah. But I think there's maybe 7 or 8 other songs on the album that I'd pick over that. Out of the 10 or 11 songs.
So I'm getting it's solid. There. It's solid.
And the album's fucking great. Like, that's just a testament.
The album's solid. Like, the album's solid. There's not a lot of weak points in it.
And it's a work of art too. It's like, it's one of those albums, if you listen to it start to finish, you kind of got it. It's one of the albums you got to listen to it in order. And they've got the transition, little transition songs. It's like, takes you on a, tells like a story, takes you on an adventure.
Instrumental or like it's a small set of lyrics and stuff.
Yeah.
Just as a side note, what do you guys think? Do you like listening to albums on shuffle, or are you a front to back kind of guy?
I'm front to back if I can. Like I know times are changing.
I just realized what I said.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'd like sorry, continue.
I'm a front to back kind of guy, you know.
No, I'm front to back as well, yeah. Like I can definitely pick like my favorite songs off a record and listen to them. Like for instance, you know, Mortal Kombat's Casualty, right?
Mm.
But if I'm going to listen to a record, I want to listen to it from start to finish. Mm. Because I think as you have grown with records and listened to them, you have just been conditioned to, you hear the end of one song and it flows into the next one. Even if it's not a record that's necessarily designed to flow like the thematic record that we're talking about here, I think you just develop that whole sort of, the next one's coming because I've always listened to it in order.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? And there's sort of some comfort in that structure.
Yeah.
So
I prefer the chaos. Like, hit that shuffle, let's go. That's where it takes me.
Yeah. It's interesting. I'm with you, Jules. Like, I view albums more often than not, I view them as a work of art.
Yeah.
Which is what they are. And, and I like to, you know, at least try, listen to it that way. And there might eventually be some songs, you know, and albums where, you know, there's albums where you have like, might be like 2 or 3 songs where you go, like, and you might just skip it, right? Like,
yeah.
And there's sometimes it might get to that point, but more often than not, I'll try to listen to it all the way through. And yeah, there's that sense of comfort in knowing what's coming next, or even if you're giving it the first listen, like that element of surprise, and you hear the little, you know, transition from one song to the next, that segue, like it's really cool, and you go, oh man, that was sick.
Yeah, and with Ghost, you always know what's coming next. Yeah. It's probably another chorus.
but in saying to expand on the song, yes, it's very repetitive at the end. I think, I'll get into that towards the end of this, but I just wanted to kind of break down the musicality in a little bit.
Oh, fuck it. That's what I come with.
Because, well, it's...
Seriously, let's go.
It's, for starters, it's very fucking catchy. So the reason why I picked it, yes, it's off Impera, it's relevant. It's probably my top 2 or 3 favourite songs from the album. But I also think it can kind of maybe bring an audience in. You know, if you're a metal fan, for instance, like a, you know, Metallica, Slayer,
if you're a fan of
Slipknot, whatever.
I feel like we're going to get a reverse here. If you're a fan of something heavier than Ghost.
Yeah, if you're a fan of something heavier than Ghost, you can. I think you'll give it the benefit of the doubt. You'll give it a go, right? And if you're kind of more of a classic rock, 80s rock, Black Sabbath kind of listener or whatever, from even dating back to earlier decades, I think it can be a good bridge into heavy metal as well. I think it sits in between nicely. It is a very
it's a better version of Imagine Dragons.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, much better.
They're very much, in my limited experience with them, like a very much a gateway into band music. Yeah. Not necessarily rock or like some kind of rock, but like music that is a band.
Yeah.
And that sort of feeds in.
Yeah.
But I can definitely see what you mean about going from heavy to this or from something lighter to this.
Yeah.
It sort of feeds through because it does have the double bass and stuff in it in places. There's like weird breakdown after the first chorus.
Yeah.
That was cool. Which I felt was really weird. But I think expanding on what you're saying about the musicality or the music of it, I found the production style and the writing very like rounded and family friendly.
Mm.
Even with the double bass and the chugs, it still doesn't hit really hard if you got it up loud. It's not sort of in your face and aggressive, which doesn't make it bad, but it very much makes it a rock song.
Yeah.
And like rock has been one of the hardest things to categorize, like harder than metal to categorize.
Sub-genres of rock. Yeah.
Exactly right. Like, you know, you can have hard rock, soft rock, old rock, classic rock, like, you know, that whole thing. But it's definitely fits into that category. But it's like I said, it's that very approachable style.
And on his vocals, because obviously we said there's no screaming, but describe his vocals for us and like why it's, because, you know, it's quite high. I guess it's high. And
how yeah, he sits, he naturally sits quite high. I think that's, which adds to the catchiness of the song, right? I think that it ties in well with the melodies he writes.
Yeah, it would almost be like a pop kind of sound.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Like, I don't think there's any.
Yeah, the bangers list. Who do pop songs?
But you know, you hear it often in metal. You'll hear very poppy choruses. Think Falling in Reverse. Think Sleeping with Sirens and
metalcore.
A Day to Remember.
That whole genre is choruses. Yeah,
exactly right. Okay. This is no exception.
Yep.
And his voice. He sits naturally in quite a high register. I don't think he has a huge range, but he uses his voice really well. Sorry.
I was very surprised. Because like I said, going in and listening to this, I had what I thought they were in my head and what they turned out to be was something very different. And like, I'm not going to say it's bad. It's not for me at all because it's very catchy.
Oh, no, I get
very
that.
Very rock. And like, you could see that on the radio, like no dramas in the Bahamas, like easy. Mm. And that's fine. It's just, I realized I had to sort of quell unrealistic outrages in myself of like days gone by. Like, I guess the Parkway argument is the best way to describe those irrational kind of things of, oh, this doesn't fit with what I think music should be. And then it's interesting when you're a heavy music listener and you come across rock, it can be very polarizing because you go, this is still band music and this is like part of the rock metal family, but it's shit because it's soft. You know what I mean? Yeah, like you find yourself going like that and you sort of have to go, well, hang on a second. Just because it's not for you doesn't mean it's not bad. Oh, sorry, it's not good. Do you know what I mean? And I very definitely had that experience with this band. Yeah.
Isn't that called Sonder? Where like, yes, other people have opinions. That's right. And they will be different to you. They live their own life. And that's
exactly right. Yeah. The concept that, you know, other things can exist and be incredibly complex without you being aware of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, I have no idea what, you know, like the rock sphere is of the world. So you said these guys are like massive and they're headlining. Not on my radar at all. You know what I mean? And you something's not on your radar and you hear that it's that big. You're like, how the fuck did I not know about this? Or like, what? But you realize you just don't see it ever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. In all honesty, they weren't on my radar previously, but mostly because I just hadn't given them the time of day. I hadn't.
Sure.
How did they get on your radar? Because for me, I thought that no one would have heard about this band unless they listened to our podcast. But how did you hear about them?
Oh, man. That's classic. So I actually, funnily enough, I got into it through another podcast, Drinks with Johnny. Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold does a weekly podcast, gets guests on frequently from whether it be sports stars. He gets like WWE wrestlers, but first and foremost, he gets other musicians on. And usually friends that he's toured with at times. So Ghosts have toured with Avenged Sevenford in the past. Tobias Ford. Them. Yeah, they'd get great together. That'd be great.
Nice. Like
the show would just be awesome. But he had Tobias on his show and I just found Tobias to be a very interesting person, interesting human being. And the way he talked about, you know, how he writes his songs, the talked about the history of the band and he seemed very genuine, very, very calm. And I was like, you know what, let's give Ghost a listen. Cause I was looking for some new music. Like,
yeah. And that's how it can happen. Eh? Love that.
I guess you've got to be, I guess you don't have to be anything, but I guess it helps being that chilled out? Because he's been in a couple of bands before Ghost as well, from what I read. And if he is, if he does have that sort of more laid back demeanor, it may just be who he is as a person. But also, when you have to do, like we said before, when you have to deal with a lot of shit on a regular basis, it, you know, it's probably beneficial to be in a position where you can just sort of let things roll off you, and you can, you know, just be a lot more relaxed in who you are, because you know he knows what he's about, doesn't really care what other people seem to think. So that, I guess, would be handy in that spot, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one thing that stood out to me was he talked about having band members that, you know, he's very much the positive vibes kind of guy is what I was getting from him. Like, you know, I can see you chuckling there, Jules. But, no, he's very much like if you're gonna be a dickhead, then fuck off kind of thing. Like, he's like –
Yeah.
Yeah, if you don't want to – if you're going to be a dickhead and court, make a stir and, like, and really, you know, be a nuisance on tour.
Because he was pretty upfront.
Yeah.
Sorry to cut you off. He was pretty upfront after the lawsuit. From what I read, he'd said that it was never the case that they weren't hired musicians because he does – I forget. Well, there was one record he did. It might have been the new one. He did everything himself and then had a session drummer.
Yeah.
It was one of his records.
I think it is.
Yeah.
It might have been Impera. I think he definitely got a lot of session musicians in, and he got a guitarist in to polish off the lead guitar parts from another band. It was a somewhat famous band in the metal scene. I can't recall. The thoughts escape me at the moment, but yeah, you're right. Like following that lawsuit, he was very upfront, and he basically said, "Look, read the fine print." Like,
yeah,
savage.
It's it is savage.
Like
but we don't know what
sort of says. This is what the stage presence is like. This is what the playing is like. If you want to do this, then let's do this. But if not, whatever.
And he's still, you know, clearly like yes, they might have, you know, created some wonderful things together, wonderful works of art and pieces of music. But they're no longer on the scene, and it's kicking ass now, right? Like it's, you know, and I'm like I said earlier, I'm not going to let that. I don't want that.
Other people's
to just cue my opinion. Right. It's
like,
music.
Because, you know, it's not like one of them was a fucking murderer or like did horrible shit. Yeah. It's like you had an argument about who wrote what. I don't care.
It probably comes down to money. If you said royalties earlier, so I'm assuming people that might have been in the session band, they would have seen the success of the band and be like, fuck, we could have got money from album sales at Al.
But he could be fucking mad shady as well. Like we said, you only ever get 10%, but there's no point casting aspersions when it's not going to affect your life.
So. Yeah, but this is a... Like the whole band is like, don't judge it by its cover.
Yeah.
Like we said.
That's right.
What appears outwardly isn't what's happening inwardly.
That's right.
I guess we've banged on about the song enough. Should we do everyone's favourite part, which is the bangs out of 10 for this song?
Yeah.
And then I'll, you know.
No, let's talk about the chorus some more.
I didn't get anywhere near into the musical side of things, but I could also go on for days.
Okay. You know what? We've got time.
2 minutes, go.
Tell us more about the musical side of the song.
Okay. Now, first of all, the first point I want to make, I think what really drives a song, and to expand on what you said earlier, Julian, is very much a rock song, right? And I think what kind of drives a song, what gives it its energy, if you listen to it carefully, the kick drum is going on every beat for the majority of the song. It's just really driving the song. It creates this kind of it's very constant. Right.
But he also does those flurries to match.
Yeah, the little flurries, these little sort of Vinnie Paul style kind of flurries every so often, right? Which I don't know, which I think is the metal elements coming into it.
It's window dressing.
Right. Yeah.
For a instrument that's driving the song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly right. So I think that's one of the standouts for me. But for me, it really kicks off and. Yes, it's when the chorus is repeated over and over and over and over again, but it's leading up to that. So you got the bridge, right, and then it breaks it down, and they do that. Then they call harmonized vocal part, then it breaks it down into nothing. A little tapping part starts, right, and almost like kind of get like Thunderstruck or Hail to the King, kind of vibes from that, and it's just a guitar to start with, just one lead guitar, and I think the drums just kind of, you know, slowly coming in. Going in like a half time, I believe. Then they sort of tease the rhythm guitar a little bit, gradually builds it up. I really dig that, because then just when you think they're going to break back into the chorus, no, it just add another layer of lead guitar, and they harmonize that tapping over the top, right? So it's like two tapping solos going on at once in harmony with each other, and it's like, all right, cool, we've reached this next layer, and then the rhythm guitar comes back in,
yeah,
couple of repetitions, and then the vocals come back in, right?
Big so it's crescendo.
Like, it's yeah. just like yeah. a big, big, massive build up at the end. Like I fucking dig it. I think that's what got me. Like I think it's yes, it is a somewhat straightforward song. It is a rock song, you know, catchy, hooky melodies.
Probably in standard tuning.
I'm going to say something controversial. For a song that goes for nearly 6 minutes, it doesn't have anywhere near enough original lyrical content. I listened to it a couple of times. I saw it was like 6 minutes. All right, this will probably have a fair bit in it, like other songs that we're going to talk about. But no, it's like two verses and 300 choruses. But again, that's just me sort of joking around. Ultimately, that doesn't detract from the quality of the song. One thing I did want to say was, like, I don't have a problem with this band. It's definitely not for me, like I said, but it's very obvious from listening to this song as a standalone piece that it's the work of one person.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
good. You can very much see. That's fair. Well, I don't know what gives me that instinct. It's not because I play an instrument. It's not because I listen to a lot of music. There's just something about it that screams, this is one guy doing the whole thing.
Look, he doesn't play the instruments, we know that, but yeah, he's written for every part.
Yes. Yeah, he does play a lot of the instruments though, doesn't he?
Yeah, he plays guitar. He plays bass, plays a bit of drums. I think he's very well-rounded. You can
tell that it's him in there tinkering by himself constantly, or he could be like the lead
composer,
or he makes all the decisions about the music.
Yeah.
So, and that doesn't necessarily make it bad. There's just something about it that screamed multi-instrumentalist solo composer. You know, because he's got two or three layers of harmony on the vocals, like you said, the guitars there, and that sort of says something about him as a, like, there's a musician there that's really not specific, but what's the word I'm looking for? Like, they're really picky, and it has to be a certain way. Like, they really want it to be this particular sound, so they'll meticulous is a word. They'll work at it constantly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, it's good. It just, yeah, that's sort of the impression that I got.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's,
and then I heard the chorus again.
and again. Yeah, and look, and I think in some instances that works. I think it has its benefits. If you've got one guy with a vision and knows what he wants to achieve, then like, I think that's a very successful formula, as long as you can get people that are happy just to come in and, you know, play their part.
As long as people are interested, I think people are always going to be interested in listening to that kind of thing as well.
Yeah.
Because like Joel said before, there's a million bands out there that you'll never hear of that have a devoted audience that love that style of music.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
But with this one as well, for their show and their stage presence, I think the end of this song, or even just the chorus in general, would be really cool to have 100K people all singing it, because it's very simple.
That would be a set closer.
And if you don't know it, surely. Yeah, if you come and you don't know it, everyone else is singing it so many times, you'd be able to eventually just get in and sing with everyone else. It'd be a very cool experience for
you,
that.
You can sort of imagine him stand, like, you know, like a lot of singers do. He'll pick up the mic stand and sort of point it at the crowd for the end of his song, like close the set with. You know, they'll have some big fucking theatrics, maybe some fireworks or some stage show or something, and then just the band plays themselves off the stage. I guess with this, I could definitely see that.
Yeah,
or maybe opening with it, like really jazz the crowd up. I'm not sure. It's got a lot of potential as a live song.
Yeah, I've tried to find some live clips. I haven't come across any. I'm not sure if they haven't played it live as yet, or if there's just nothing out there as.
With every time he does a new incarnation of Papa Emeritus or whatever, does he change his behavior live?
Yeah, yeah.
So like, does he? Because he always, every time I've seen him live or in person on YouTube, he's just standing there. It's like he's delivering a sermon, because that's kind of the whole thing. But has he ever had an incarnation where he like moves around a lot? Or
Papa 3 for sure.
Right,
Papa 3. So, like you guys described him as, very much kind of standing there, like almost staring into your soul when he's on the stage, right?
Yeah.
And it's very, it's very eerie. Feel like you feel like you just joined a cult.
He doesn't wear makeup. He actually wears a prosthetic face, doesn't he?
Yeah. And I think it might be a bit more on the side of makeup and face paint now. I'm not sure. There might be some prosthetics involved still. But Papa Emeritus 3 was very much more active.
I feel like if he would have done the same thing a couple of times and gone, all right, maybe I need to spice it up a little bit.
And it's good. It keeps it fresh for the fans. Yeah. It's cool.
Like, I actually thought it was a different guy each time, and I tried to convince myself that the vocals were so different. It was a different singer.
When you were telling me that they were around in 1969 or whatever.
I heard rumors around 1969. I got more rumors. I heard that David Grohl actually played drums for
them. I did read that one as well. So,
who knows?
He produced their EP that's Square Hammers on, I believe. Okay. Yeah.
David Grohl produced an EP for Ghost.
Yeah.
That guy's got his fingers in everything.
Yeah.
And what a guy.
What a guy.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say about the music of the song? Music,
no, I think music. I think we've covered it in terms of the music. We can probably start to.
Would you like to rate the song with me?
Yeah, we can rate the song. But before you, any other Ghost songs you really like?
Yes. Off an earlier album, there's a song called Dance Macabre, I believe. That's how it's pronounced.
Yeah.
That's a really good one.
Catchy one.
I'd suggest listening to that one. It's good.
I heard that one. I can't tell you what they're called, but I listened to Infesta Suman or Sumam or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I listened to a couple of songs off that. It all sounded similar to this to me, but I don't think my ears are tuned for it. I think nothing I could recommend, but I'd say that if you're into that sort of rock, this is definitely a good band to start with.
Yeah.
Because it will sort of can lead you to heavy metal.
Yes.
Yeah.
And heavy music, moreover.
Yeah. I would say, if you want to get into something of a similar kind of caliber, I'd say, what's the fucking called? Witch Image off Prequel, their previous album.
Yeah.
That's a really catchy one. I think Dance Macabre's off the same one. So it's another, another fucking great album. And then also earlier on in that album, we've got a song called Faith. Right. And it's just heavy, demonic, Halloween kind of style. It's very, very, very like, you know, if you're a kid, you'd be fucking scared listening to that song.
Might have to go and check it out then.
Yeah, that might be a bit more.
I think I just managed to find every song that was like the light song on the record.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
This is like the first 2-3 songs of Prequel, and I think you might be a bit more up your alley. Yeah. But anyway,
this song as a standalone, obviously this podcast is mostly what it'd be about metal and like those kind of songs that are heavier. If I take all that away from this song, a standalone piece, and how it is, you know, I give it like a 7 out of 10 for this song.
I'm gonna go a 9.
A 9.
Yeah.
So 9 for me is borderline masterpiece, mate. There's like 7 lyrics in this song. There's 7 words.
Doesn't matter. You don't need lyrics for it to be a masterpiece. Like, and I'm not saying it's not a masterpiece, but it's not too far away for me. Like it really grew on me. I think the more I listen to it, the more I like it.
Yeah, so, here comes the most controversial.
5.
5 out of 10.
Musically, it's good. And like we said earlier, it will appeal to a different audience and it's very approachable. Mm. So I'm not critical of it in the music aspect at all or the writing aspect. It just doesn't slap at all for me.
Yeah, that's fine.
It doesn't bang his list at all, that's right. But it's on the bangers.
No, I mean, like, we got 9, 7, and 5, so that's like a 6.97 average.
Yeah.
I'm not really a statistician, but that's near the upper echelon. It's not too bad.
Look, while I've got everyone here, I'll just quickly say a couple of things about Ghost again. Why I think Tobias is a good person, in general. So a fan made some art for the band, and then the band reached out to him and said, can we use this art you've created on a shirt? And then they used, you know, a fan's art on a shirt. I think that's really cool. And they also do a cover of Enter Sandman. Did you hear this story?
No.
Sandman, and the royalties from that song or whatever it does, however they make money from covering Enter Sandman, I don't know if they pay the money or they get the money, but they use that money to fund a camp for trans kids just to give them a safe space. They're just trying to do good for humanity. And rather, you know, while you see the album covers, like, oh my God, it's some kind of Satanist, ritualistic, psychotic, hell worshipping, evil thing. Well, this is the reality of it. It's not at all. There's a really good guy in there doing really good work. And like, check them out. They're great.
Someone's artwork doesn't define who they are as a person.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really wholesome to hear as well.
Yeah.
They've deliberately gone, okay, we're going to have to pay someone else for this, but we're going to use this as a source of income as well.
Yes.
So there you go.
So, anything else you want to add, guys?
I just want to say it's fucking good to be back.
It's good to be back. We'll see you in the next episode. We'll get heavier, harder.
Waffle than, again.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're doing. Are we going to talk about what we're doing in the next episode or?
No, we'll be surprised. That's an amazing outro. Thanks everyone for listening and we'll see you next time.